Monster Man, Episode 110, Yakulis to Germlane. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're going to be doing the entire J chapter of The Fiend Folio, 1981 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before we do that, though, a couple of quick announcements. First, I'd like to thank one of our Patreon supporters. Now, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if, like today's backer, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities. But this is not a new backer. This is an existing backer who has increased their level of support. So thank you very much, Jake Baker, for your continued support. Also, I want to warn you about some possible schedule disruptions in October. For family reasons, I need to fly back to the U.S. for about a week in the middle of the month, and that's going to make recording more difficult. I don't know to what extent I'm going to be able to record from the road. Between now and then, I'm going to try to, like, build up a pad of episodes, but that still might be tricky to do when I'm away. So I'm going to try and make sure that we get the same number of episodes that you would normally expect, but they just might come at slightly different times. So if, you know, for a week or so in mid-October, Monster Man's going up at weird times, that would be why. I don't anticipate a big disruption, but I wanted to let you know in advance about the possibility. All right. Our first monster for today is listed as the Yakuli, but my assumption, and I'm not like a Latin expert, would be that this is actually the plural and the single is Yakulis. That's certainly what it looks like in the Latin sources that I've looked at. So this was written by Phil Masters, a creator of the Iron Cobra and stalwart of the British gaming scene. And of course, Phil, who I think is a local here in Cambridge, continues to be an important figure in the gaming industry long after this. He wrote stuff for GURPS, Mage the Sorcerer's Crusade at White Wolf, did some stuff for Champions, probably a lot of other stuff I'm not thinking of. Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. Anyway, the Yakulis is a type of monster that's very common in the Monster Manual, but relatively rare in the Fiend Folio, which is to say it's a monster based on sort of classical natural history texts. So it fits in with things like the Lucrecata. The Yakulis is a snake that kind of throws itself at you like a javelin, and it's also called a javelin snake. And it appears pretty much in this form in the writings of Pliny. So here's an extract from Pliny's Natural History, Book 8. The Yakulis darts from the branches of trees, and it is not only to our feet that the serpent is formidable, for these fly through the air even, just as though they were hurled from an engine. Which is pretty much exactly what we get here. It's a snake, and it can't really fly, but it, like, gets up to a high point, and then it shoots itself at you. And then, if you're not dead, and, you know, drops to the ground and has to crawl back up the tree. So, you're not going to be fighting one Yakulis so much as you're going to have to make your way through a Yakulis-infested jungle, or something like that, right? You're going to be in an environment where there's a lot of trees and a lot of these snakes, and you're going to, like, enter their territory and create an aggressive response, I think. They're definitely kind of, they fit with the sort of, oh, here we are exploring an exotic land trope. And actually, I feel like exotic lands full of what classical writers imagined in exotic lands would work really well, because it has a sense of familiarity in that these are creatures that are known from folklore. Well, these aren't folklore, I mean, these are, but from folklore and literature, I guess I should say. So they have that sense of familiarity, but they're also exotic. Whereas, there are certain monsters that you don't necessarily have the feel of the exotic about, like orcs would be one. If you've ever read Joe Abercrombie's First Law books, he tries to make his sort of inhuman monsters a little bit more exotic, like there are all these people going, but it doesn't quite come off, basically because we as readers are so familiar with that idea that the character's incredulity about them doesn't quite land. At least that's how I felt. But so the Yakulis is a great monster for a natural hazard that is weirder than lions and tigers and bears. Next up, we have the Germlane. This is by none other than Gary Gygax. Now, I have looked around for a source for the Germlane in terms of a D&D source, right? Because there are a lot of these things that were added that are, you know, by Gary Gygax or whatever, that come from some scenario. TSR kind of used the Fiend Folio to put into a monster book things that had been published elsewhere. So an example of that would be Loth, who had already appeared in Deities and Demigods, and now appeared in a new form in the Fiend Folio, or the Drow, who were in the Monster Manual, but whose background had been so greatly expanded by published scenarios that they wanted to kind of give them an update, I guess. But I can't see that this is the case for the Germlane. The only reason that I thought it might be is because the background entry for the Germlane is so extensive. There's another equally extensive write-up in the next chapter, but that is for something that had had a scenario by the time that we get to 1981 and the Fiend Folio. At least, that's my thinking. So this just seems to be something that Gary Gygax was really into. So the Germlane, who are also called Jinxkins or Bane Midges, are little kind of sprightly pixie-ish people. They live among rats, and so they live in the kinds of places where rats tend to be. So they live in, you know, in between the spaces between the walls of buildings. They live in, you know, tunnels and warrens and whatever, in sewers and in attics and so on. What these guys basically are is evil borrowers. The Borrowers was a series of children's fantasy novels by Mary Norton about these little people who live in, you know, a house of regular humans. And there were four Borrower novels by the time that the Fiend Folio came out. There had been a TV movie that came out in 1973. And I can't prove that, you know, Gygax is basically doing the Germlane as a mean-spirited twist on the Borrowers, because this is obviously like a classic fairy tale concept rather than specifically taken from one inspiration. But I do wonder, I mean, I always come back to this idea of Gary Gygax as a parent, right? I mean, he had young children, and so presumably he'd be familiar with like the children's literature and children's TV that was knocking around at that time. And we know that he was a bricoleur, right? That he didn't let things pass him by without taking them in as inspiration for Dungeons and Dragons and for, you know, for other things. So without taking them in as inspiration for Dungeons and Dragons, whether for, you know, his game specifically or for like the game as a published line. And of course, for a long time, those two were essentially, you know, pretty much the same thing. So my hunch tells me that these guys are clearly meant to be the Borrowers, or also they're kind of like Lilliputians in Gulliver's Travels, and they have that same sense of, like, mischief. You know, we've talked before about scale in D&D, right? How giants are fun basically because of their scale. Well, this is the reverse, right? You are a giant to the Germlane, and they're aware of that fact, which I really like about them, right? They're not going to waste themselves in, you know, wave attacks, each of them sticking you in the foot with a pin for 1d2 damage or whatever it is. Instead, they use their small size, which basically makes them very hard to spot. Oh, they also have, like, protective coloration, and, you know, they blend into dungeon surroundings really well, and they run around doing things like, you know, poking holes in your holy water flasks and, you know, undoing the buckles on your scabbard and whatever, so that they aren't going to kill you, but that hopefully the, you know, the monsters will kill you, and then they can come along and, I don't know, rob your corpse or pry out your gold teeth or something. It's interesting, the Germlane entry is really, like, I don't want to use the word judgmental, but it uses a lot of negative language about these guys. Now, obviously, negative language is kind of what they deserve, but it calls them evil, cowardly, nasty, spiteful, and wicked. And I think that this really does kind of sum up the Germlane, right? Like, the Germlane are a little bit like goblins to an even higher degree, or kobolds. So with goblins and kobolds, what we have are these monsters that are, like, small and physically weak, but really, like, cruel and mean-spirited. And the Germlane are even smaller and more physically weak, but therefore even crueler and more mean-spirited. So you're, you know, wandering around the dungeon or raiding the castle or whatever it is, and you're just getting bullied by these little jerks. You know, you're trying to do something else, and these little guys are just harassing you. They're frightening your dogs and peeing in your drinking water. And they're slitting the, you know, climbing up your leg and slitting the bottom of your purse. Or putting a bunch of spiders in your knapsack. Or tying bells to you so that you jingle when you walk, right? Like, the Germlane will do just all kinds of mischief. And this is a very fine line, because you don't want to be that DM that rejoices in the discomfiture of the player characters. But I do think that with most groups, you can get a laugh out of the players with the Germlane, because even though their characters are being inconvenienced, there's just something so fundamentally absurd. Like, we can all kind of appreciate the little guy playing a prank on the big guy, even when we're the big guy. You'd have to not have much of a sense of humor not to find some creative Germlane mischief humorous. Now, you wouldn't want an entire dungeon that was nothing like that, right? You definitely want it to be, you know, here's the area of the dungeon that has Germlane in it. And I almost think about it like the, in Army of Darkness, when Ash fights the little versions of himself that come out of the broken mirror, that's kind of how I imagine Germlane. And I feel like they have to talk in high squeaky voices like this! And they would do that kind of like Rube Goldberg pranks. And then also, presumably the players will eventually, you know, boil up a big kettle of water and pour boiling water down the Germlane tunnels and stuff like that, right? So you really just get, if you get something that's not a fight but a complication for another fight, which is a kind of monster that I always like, you get a monster that is in many ways true to kind of what people used to believe about elves. Like, one thing that people thought about fairies was that they would mess up horses' hair. Like, if your horse got tangles in its mane, those are elf locks. You telling me that magical beings don't have anything better to do than, you know, make brushing your horse's mane inconvenient? Well, I bet the Germlane don't, actually. So they fit a fairy tale idea, which is always something that I like in a D&D monster. And they force people to think creatively. You know, these are guys that you cannot fight by limbering up your battle axe, setting your shield in front of you, and just walking forward and going toe-to-toe. And they're guys where, if you use your really powerful spells on them, it's kind of a waste. So you actually have to get creative and really think about how you want to, like, you have to reimagine the space of the combat. And I think that that's a really interesting thing to do in a Dungeons & Dragons game, right? Too many monsters, well, not too many, but we don't need any more monsters where the way to fight them is the wizards stand at the back and chuck spells and, you know, fighters and barbarians and whatever go in and get longswording. Like, you want a fight like that, certainly, because you want everybody to get to do their thing, to get to excel in their role. But it's no fun if that's just what everybody always does. You want monsters that bring people out of their comfort zone, I guess, and force them to think about how their character deals with different types of threats. So they have that combination of, like, a monster and a puzzle. And the Germlane do this in a way that kind of takes the pressure off, too. Like, they're probably not going to kill you. I don't know. You can be that first level wizard and a Germlane runs out and cuts your hamstrings and you die. That's probably less satisfying. But I feel like there's a lot of potential with the Germlane. I have no idea why they're called Germlane. Obviously, Jinxkins refers to, like, a jinx is bad luck. So the idea that, you know, lots of things, that bad stuff that happens to you that you think is bad luck is really caused by these guys. I mean, I guess they're gremlins, really, aren't they? They're like these mysterious fairy creatures that were blamed for mechanical failures in airplanes, gremlins. And Bane midges, you know, Bane is something bad and a midge is something small, so that's fine. But I don't know where the name Germlane comes from. I presume that Jinxkins and Bane midges is what other people call them, and Germlane is what they call themselves. In later editions, they are much more obviously mouse or rat-like, rather than kind of like goblin-y looking, like they are in this. And I don't know, do you think they're partly influenced by the rat guys from Fritz Leiber, from Fafnir and the Grey Mouser, who of course would go on basically to become the Skaven in Warhammer Fantasy? I think of those guys as being bigger, but I could be wrong about that. Anyway, they fit into a wide tradition of ratty mischief guys. And yeah, I'm actually pretty fond of them. And that's it for the J chapter. It's only got two monsters in it. In our next episode, we're going to get into K. We're going to look at the Kamadon, the Kelpie, and the Kenku. So please join me for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the Deities and Demigods Advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.